4.
Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been down to this day. But it went straight down the middle. Now that winter.
All right, time for birdies and bogeys and biceps. And here in Nashville, box shots and basketball, yeah. Kentucky blue blood screaming their lungs out. But we're going to talk about the quiet, genteel game of golf, where you got to be perfectly still. You can't breathe a sound when a golfer is about to take that backswing, about to make that putt. We welcome in another edition of Birdies, Bogeys, Biceps, George Bryan III. And we have special guest with us covering the TPC Force down in Jacksonville, Florida, just outside of Jacksonville, Florida, MJ Ward. And before I go to the guys, let me update the leaderboard. We got Wyndham Clark, a 65, got a four-shot lead at 14 under. Xander Schauffele, a 69. Nick Taylor, a 68. They are at 10 under. Matt Fitzpatrick, 69 at 9 under. Maverick McNeely, a 68, 9 under. That's the top of your leaderboard. And then we've got as well Roy McIlroy, a 73. He's at minus 6. Matt Neesmith, a good day, a 67. He's at 4 under. Ben Martin, a 71. He's at minus 1. Lucas Glover, a 69. He's even. Justin Thomas, a 69, is... Make that Justin Thomas a 74. He's plus 1. Carson Young, a 75, plus 2. Jordan Spieth, a 72, plus 2. Andrew Novak, a 74, plus 4. We've got some college golf as well we'll touch on in just a moment. But, George, welcome to the tee. We got MJ standing by to tee it up with you. Take it away, my friend.
Yeah, let's go ahead and bring MJ. Let's get him to stick it in the ground with us. Welcome, MJ, from Jacksonville.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you guys.
Yeah, looks to me like you had great weather. The great outdoors is being kind to you all down there in Jax.
Well, I think, you know, when you have somebody like Wyndham Clark, today was really, really impressive. I mean, to shoot a 65 on day one, come back again with the same score, ties the tournament record of 130 that Greg Norman had when he won in 94. I didn't think that there would be anybody possible that could threaten 24 under, which is what Greg Norman has as the 72-hole record. And Wyndham Clark potentially has that possibility of doing that. It was impressive. I mean, he's only had two bogeys. He's made over 200 feet of putts, which is mind-boggling. He birdied four of the first five holes. This was really a tremendous performance over the first 36 holes. I mean, clearly he's the defending U.S. Open champion. There's still a lot of golf to go, as there always is at a place like Sawgrass, where anything is possible. But the first 36 holes, truly impressive stuff. Yeah, you can't minimize when a man shoots two rounds like that on this kind of golf course. It was there, and it was amazing what he has done so far. So it'll be interesting to see, now that he has the lead, how does he play? Does he continually keep doing what he's been doing?
Yeah, well, he's proven that he definitely can keep the role going. And what he and Greg Norman and Phil Kornblut have in common is they all just drive the ball exceptionally well. I mean, he rips the center out of that fairway.
Who was that third guy you mentioned?
Well, it's Greg Norman, Wyndham Clark, and Phil Kornblut. they all drive it a lot alike, really, really long and straight. And, Phil, you know what I'm talking about. You can dismantle any course if you hit it really long and straight off the tee.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would love to be able to do that, George, but, you know, I'm resisting moving up to the senior tees. That's the last thing I'm fighting, you know. I'm going to hold out for as long as possible to still play the whites, though I've been encouraged to play the ladies. But I'm not going that far, but I'm holding out playing the white tees for as long as I can.
Yeah, well, that is interesting at TPC, when you start, and the ball, it seems the getting some roll, and I haven't watched this much TV golf this year. So this kind of starts the season in my mind and begins the promise for Augusta. But the conditions seem just about as docile as it can be for scoring there, MJ, the TV's making it look kind of easy.
Well, I mean, you know, keep this in mind. I mean, when you don't have much wind and the ground isn't super firm and you get somebody who's, you know, on their game, and the thing that always separates all the elite players, I mean, there's one key word, it's the putter. You know, the hitting of the golf ball between the elite players, there really isn't that much of a difference. I mean, the distance can be a little bit different depending upon how strong a player is, but it's really all it comes down to is, can you make putts? And when you have a guy who's made over 200 feet of putts, which is remarkable, if you did that over 72 holes, never mind do it over 36, it's just, you know, it's incredible. I mean, as I said before, I was there when Greg Norman shot 24 under, and, you know, I have always thought among the things that Greg Norman has done in a career that would be a record that would probably be never touched, because it's just remarkable when you consider the venue. But Wyndham Clark is within striking distance of that. It's not out of, you know, potential. I mean, don't get me wrong, if he even wins the event by shooting 16 under or 15 under, a win is a win. But it's really impressive to see what he has done. And I often think that he really flies under the radar, because much of the attention has always been on people like Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. And, you know, when before he left for LIV, when John Rahm was on the PGA Tour. But he is definitely a major player. And it'll be interesting to see how he plays from this point forward, given what can happen at a place like this. I mean, you know, even though things can go well, this is the kind of golf course, I said it the other day, when Pete Dye created Sawgrass, he wanted to make sure that the top players were exposed to the kind of situations where you can have a train wreck. And there are potential train wrecks out there. When you're playing at the pace that Wyndham Clark is playing at, hard to imagine somebody can continue that pace. But, you know, when he's 14 under, and it's an amazing run that he's had so far, and it'll be interesting to see not only how he plays, but how the guys are who are behind him. I mean, a lot of things can happen with that.
How are things going at 17? I did see one hole in one yesterday. Are they dialing it in with the wind? Is the wind as calm there as it is everywhere else on the course? Is 17 causing any problems?
You know, Phil, I got to tell you, in all the years I have seen this hole, I mean, it boggles the mind how much that players feel the intensity of the audience that's around them. I mean, much has been made, you know, when we talk about par threes, you know, like the one in Scottsdale at the Waste Management at TPC, where they have the crowds around. You know, when you have a green, which essentially is really large, and the guys are not hitting more than a wedge or a soft nine iron, unless the wind really comes up. But it's amazing how Pete Dye just got into the heads of a lot of these players. I mean, for a pro at the elite level to find water, unless they're shooting for the pin, and you'll see the Sunday pin in its traditional place, which will be back right corner. If you miss that green, somehow or another, you just allow the atmosphere to overwhelm your senses. It's hard for me to imagine that many players could really miss a green with nothing more than a wedge or a nine iron in their hand. But that's what happens with pressure, and a lot of things can turn just because people feel it at that point in time in the round, and things can happen on that hole. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how players play it, because, you know, you can't let Wyndham Clark just get by the third round and have a 5-6-shot lead on the golf course, because then you're going to have to start making some moves. And it'll be interesting to see tomorrow how somebody like Scottie Scheffler, I mean, he's 6 shots off the pace, but it's very, very doable for a guy like him to dial it in and move up the leaderboard. So it's going to have to be a combination of how do the players react that are behind, and then how importantly does Clark keep going forward. Hard to say how that plays out on a place like, you know, Sawgrass.
Sure. George, before we continue, let me update a little college golf, because the college golf season now is going to really tick up. We've got the Schenkel being played in Statesboro, Georgia, and South Carolina's in it, and Gamecocks are right now in ninth place after the first round. They shoot a 289 as plus one. They're 12 back of the leader, Middle Tennessee State. Nathan Franks leads the Gamecocks. He's tied for sixth, and he shoots a 3-under par score opening round. And then you've got the Florida State matchup down at Tallahassee. Coastal Carolina's playing there. And actually, it is – no, they've played two rounds. They've played two rounds. Coastal is plus 32. Not going well. Duke is your leader at 31 under. So a couple of collegiate events going on as we see the college golf season heat up. And these college guys, George, as you well know, they'll be the stars of tomorrow that MJ will be writing about as he covers the PGA and to some degree the LIV Tour.
And it is interesting, not in contention, but Oberg, they were talking about he was just playing college golf last season, and there's no question that the college programs are basically training grounds for tour players. And there's no question that our game needs young superstars, and that's kind of cool to see Wyndham Clark play well. And I'm looking at the leaderboard now. Xander Schauffele, he's kind of he'll be my favorite heading into the weekend, at least what I'm looking at. And McNeely, I guess he's a Stanford grad. MJ, you can back me up on that. And then, so it's weird, the game star for some new talent. Also, the setting is perfect for it to take place. And LIV Tour, I'm glad to hear. I did not know, didn't realize you were covering the LIV Tour. Talk a little bit about what you're seeing between the two, MJ.
Well, I have to be honest with you. I really don't think the LIV Tour is really kind of separated into two kind of different parts. You have the guys who went over to LIV that were already in the seventh and eighth inning, to use a baseball metaphor, in their careers. I mean, there really wasn't going to be much high-level golf coming left from Phil Mickelson, Lee Westwood, Sergio Garcia, Graham McDowell, Ian Poulter, players of that sort. And then you had some younger players, Cameron Smith, Joaquin Neiman, a few of those guys who are younger. They played on the LIV circuit. The thing I've said this for a very long time, without world ranking points, it's hard for me to envision that a young player will just jump to LIV unless the money is so ridiculously out of sight. But if you go to LIV, you basically are putting yourself in a box, because you're not going to be able to get world ranking points to play in the major championships. So, you know, I think LIV has some dynamic players. Clearly, Brooks Koepka is one of them. I mean, he's won 5 major championships. DJ is still... He could still say he's a factor when he plays, because he's still contemporary enough. But on the PGA Tour, on what is out there, and let me just mention to both you and Phil, I mean, I cover a lot of the Korn Ferry events, and the talent that is on the Korn Ferry is just amazing. And I think part of the thing that had to happen with the PGA Tour, they had to have a provision to get younger players faster into the mix so that they could play at the highest of levels. They couldn't have an exemption situation where you're holding aside 125 spots, and in many cases, half of the number of that 125 is only hanging on by their fingernails to remain exempt. You have to be more competitive by allowing more fluid players moving into the scene. And, you know, George, you just mentioned before about Ludwig as an example. There's a number of players that are just, you know, really ready to come on the scene. And it's just a question of whether or not they can get those opportunities. And if they do, I think you're going to see this next generation of players, when they are emerging, then you're going to see that happen. And it could happen as early as this year with this year's majors coming up.
No question. I think it's definitely the most intriguing period of time that we've had in golf. Tremendous opportunity. You mentioned the Korn Ferry Tour, and I agree. There are a lot of great players nobody's ever heard about, but they're just bubbling, ready to go. And it's wide. I like your term, too, circuit. I think that I've alluded to the LIV, or I've mentioned this. I don't think there's anything wrong with having another tour, a little bit like the ice skaters at the Olympic level. You have when you're playing for the gold, and then you have your off-season money-making ice circuses. And I'm not familiar with what you call those competitions, but I know you got there for entertainment. And
yeah, I think the main thing with when you play golf, I think it always comes down to, and I think this has been said by Rory McIlroy and a few other players. I know that Jack Nicklaus has alluded to it when he was playing, which is, are you there for the money or are you there for the titles? And some people will say, well, I really want to be there for both. But if you had to choose, what would you choose? And I think there's players, depending upon where they are age-wise and what they've got left in the tank, obviously some people are going to look and say, well, I really want the money. But there's going to be other players. And a lot of these young guys, when they're coming on the scene, they know what it means to have the green jacket being put on your shoulders. They know what it means to pick up the Wanamaker trophy or to have the claret jug or to get the Jack Nicklaus gold medal because you're U.S. Open champion. Those are the things and the memories that the younger players want. The money will come and go, but the title, the name, to know that you'll always be at Augusta when you win the green jacket, those are the intangibles that can't be purchased. You're going to have to earn those, and you're going to have to be eligible to play. I think what's interesting about LIV is that it tried to create a separate universe, but I don't know how that universe is going to work given the format that it has. That's just my own personal opinion. I think it works for the players who want to capitalize on the quick cash. There's no doubt that that's happened. But I think that when you look at legacy, when you want to say at the end of the day, when you finish playing golf, how did you stack up to the Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus's or even the contemporary players, the Brooks Koepkas and the Rory McIlroys? Major championships define legacy. And I think that's always going to be the issue for LIV and how this is ultimately going to be resolved, because the game does not benefit by being split with two different groups. I think golf has to have some unified vision, but it'll always come down to, you know, how is this going to get worked out and what we will soon see happen. It's hard to say how that will happen because I don't know where the path is going to get merged. I think right now it's very undetermined about what will happen with professional golf.
Well, no question. I think at the end of the day, the people will speak and carry that weight, and there's room. There's plenty of room. There was years ago, there was an NBA and an ABA and an NFL and an AFL, and I mean, you got the American League and the National League. We made too big a deal. We made this too daggum complicated, way too complicated. These folks need to figure it out quick, get the big names back up top. That's the one thing that is aggravating is now some of the great names that people really want to watch, well, you can't find them week in and week out. And anyhow,
yeah, the thing about professional golf is it's getting younger on the men's side. I mean, for a long time, the women's game had a number of young, real young talent coming on the scene. And you know, it used to be on the men's side, it would take you maybe a few years to get acclimated, and then you start to show what you've got. But that's not the case anymore. I mean, you have guys now that come out, they've played AJGA events. In some cases, they haven't even played 4 years of college golf because they want to get out into the professional circuit. And you're seeing that. I mean, the generational switch in golf is already happening. And it's amazing when you think that Scottie Scheffler, I think, is 27 years old. And he's been out here now for a number of years. And then you see guys like Rory McIlroy, who's 34 years old. You know, there's a window that you have got to get to before it shuts on you. And these younger guys that are coming out, the talent that they have, it's now really about can they really show what they've got to play at the highest of levels in the biggest of events. That's always going to be the determining factor about how good a player you are. And they want to be tested. And they're pushing the envelope for what you see what these guys week to week are doing. Wyndham Clark is a great example of that, of a guy who really wanted to get tested. He proved it in winning at Los Angeles last year at the U.S. Open, and now he's continuing that going forward. So the boundaries for professional golf are really limitless, especially if you have that kind of desire, drive, and a talent to do what these guys are doing. It's amazing, and I think this is going to be a fantastic weekend. And as you said before, George, it's a great opening, you know, with Augusta coming right around the corner.
Beautiful warm-up, and Phil just sent me that 20 seconds. That's where we'll wind it up, and I know enjoy your weekend. I'll be pulling for Xander Schauffele, and I know you have it'll be fun seeing how it shakes out. And appreciate you being part of it with us, and thank you for that. And, Phil, until next week, TM High, enjoy your weekend, and shoot them low.
George, thank you. MJ, always a pleasure, my man. We'll talk to you again soon. MJ Ward from the Players. George Bryan from Points Unknown, but somewhere on a golf course, I'm sure. And it always amazes me, Chris, that I'm going to bring this up maybe next week. Every time I ride on I-20 through Augusta, and even get off on Washington Road, there is not a single sign that mentions Augusta National. I mean, we're talking about probably one of the 10 most revered pieces of sports earth on the planet.
Yeah.
Is that redundant? Pieces of sports earth that exists. I mean, really, one of the most hallowed pieces of sports ground that exists. And they don't want you to know it's there until...
Well, that's how you get to that hallowed ground. You don't let people know it's there. And if it weren't for, Bobby Jones Expressway, I think you wouldn't even know there was any influence in Augusta from the world of golf.
I mean, not even a little sign put in the ground that says, you know, Augusta National this way. That's just crazy, man. But that's the way they operate. And, you know, I do admire, you know, people think they're kind of snobbish and all that kind of stuff at Augusta. I admire the fact that they control their message and they control their product like nobody else does. And you can't buy them off.
Very true.
Yep.
And they've done a really, really good job of doing that. And from what I understand, I've never been to the Masters, but from what I understand, they have not tried to, you know, put the price gouging on the backs of their fans either. Which has probably made them even more popular with golf fans.